And welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I'm your host, Brian Pettaway, and I'm so happy to have you here with me this Sunday morning. I'll be your host for about an hour, and I've got a pretty good show lineup for you today that I'm excited about. Last week, we spoke to Laura Mitchell and the struggles that a parent goes through when their child is addicted to a substance. Now, that was great information, and I so loved having her on. I'm going to follow it up this week, though, with someone who actually struggled with substance abuse and addiction himself. I've known him for a very long time, and to be honest with you, I didn't know for a very long time that he was going through what he was going through in his life. He's going to recount how easy it was to fall into that life, the toll it takes on your family and friends and yourself, of course, and how difficult it is. And of course, we're going to talk to the Petty and get his NFL picks for this upcoming Sunday and Monday and Thursday. And I know he's got something to say about my Ravens. I'm not upset. I'm waiting for him to take it like a man. But first, I'm going to do what I like to do most, and that's talk about this past week's news and current events and add a little bit of my commentary to them. So I hope that you're feeling great because I'm feeling great. Let's get right to it. About 3 months ago, I did a report on my morning news during the week that the Baltimore Police Department was adding a $5,000 sign-on bonus for people who were joining, and starting salaries were raised to $60,000, not only in an effort to recruit new police personnel, but also to keep police personnel that they already had, because Baltimore City cops were either quitting or retiring far faster than they could recruit new personnel. Well, according to the BPD, none of that new money that they've thrown at people has worked. Because almost 3 months after the announcement was made, officer vacancies have worsened from 392 openings to 420 openings. And the department's former union president, Bobby Cherry, took to social media last week to blame city officials. One of his tweets said in part, "Our cops don't feel supported by the current mayor, police commissioner, or city state's attorney." Commissioner Harrison sent out a statement through the BPD saying that recruitment and retention are down across agencies and in all industries throughout the country. He said that they are focusing their efforts on recruiting the best quality persons who really want to join the department and have the right temperament. He said this includes more minorities, women, and candidates who live in Baltimore City, which is actually a big deal, and I'll get into that in just a second. He also said that currently we have 175 candidates in the background investigation stage, and 67 recruits in the police academy. Now, that number of applicants would suggest that more officers are on the way, they just need to get through training. Now, that won't happen overnight though. Baltimore City's police academy is 6 months long, and Baltimore City needs new officers right now. The one thing that the commissioner said that has me optimistic about this whole process is his desire to find recruits that live actually within the city, who were born and raised and who are from Baltimore City. That's huge, because oftentimes what you have are cops who have never lived in the city, who don't live in the city now, coming in from other areas of either the county or sometimes even different states, coming down here trying to police residents of Baltimore, having no idea how to stay in touch, be in touch, or communicate with residents of the city. They're just walking around afraid with their hand on the gun all of the time, acting as if aggression is the only thing that's going to keep themselves safe, the only thing that's going to keep people in line. And that's not necessarily the case. Most of the time, it's not the case. So yeah, if there's any silver lining in this whole situation of there being not enough police, the good thing is that the commissioner is trying to fill those vacancies with qualified cops from this area. That makes a huge difference. And with less than a month to go in the Maryland gubernatorial elections, Frederick County Public Schools is saying oops to Dan Cox and we're sorry. Apparently, a student noticed that Republican gubernatorial candidate Dan Cox's campaign website was blocked while working on an assignment for a class. According to the parent of the student was able to access Democratic gubernatorial candidate Wes Moore's campaign website on the same device. A spokesperson for the Frederick County Public Schools said the site was blocked due to a filter that classified the website of Dan Cox's as a blog. According to that spokesperson, the district's Department of Technology Infrastructure was asked to reclassify the site and make it accessible. FSCPS also said the issue was certainly not for any political reasons, and said that if a student realizes the site is blocked and informs their teacher, they can then submit a work order to the tech team to have it unblocked. Now, this isn't a big thing today with this one student, but I guarantee you, if Dan Cox loses this gubernatorial election in November, which the polls suggest that he probably will, this one situation with this one student is going to be made to be a huge deal. They're going to call fraud. They're going to call, I don't know, voter suppression. They're going to call all kinds of stuff. I promise you that this will come up again. Okay, is anybody tired of hearing about Marilyn Mosby's trial that never seems to begin? I mean, I am. And apparently, now there's another delay. Marilyn Mosby's attorney wants to move her trial for perjury and making a false statement on a loan application out of the state. They want to move the trial. Mosby's attorney filed a motion under seal on Thursday. And on Friday, Judge Lydia Grigsby issued a scheduling order showing that there was a motion to transfer the venue. Now, because Maryland only has one federal district, in order to change the venue, the case would have to move to a different state. Grigsby ordered Mosby's team to file a document arguing their reason for the venue that had to be in by Friday, which they did, and now she's given the federal prosecutors until November 4th to respond. Now remember, this case was moved from August to early September to September 19th to early October, and now it's after October 22nd, today's the 23rd, and now they have until November 4th. And listen, it's not just Marilyn Mosby's camp that has moved these dates back. It's both camps. I don't know who's afraid of who. I don't know if Mosby's team is afraid of the federal prosecutors or the federal prosecutors are not prepared for Mosby's team. I don't know. But I'm so tired, and I'm sure I'm not alone, of hearing about this case that never seems to start. I just wish they would move on with it so that Marilyn Mosby can go on with her life and we can go on with our lives without having to hear about her or this trial. In other news, the Associated Press is reporting that Steve Bannon, a longtime ally of former President Donald Trump, was sentenced Friday to serve 4 months behind bars after defying a subpoena from the House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols allowed Bannon, of course, to stay free, pending an appeal and a potentially lengthy process, and also imposed a fine of $6,500 as part of the sentence. Bannon was convicted in July of 2 counts of contempt of Congress, one for refusing to sit for a deposition and the other for refusing to provide documents. Now, Nichols handed down the sentence after saying the law was clear that contempt of Congress is subject to mandatory minimum sentences and at least 1 month behind bars. Now, what's interesting to me is that is the law, yet Bannon is running around free right now. Had it been anybody else, if it were just me, I'd be behind bars right now. He also said that in his view, Bannon is not taken seriously the responsibility of his actions. He also said that before he imposed the sentence, others must be deterred from committing similar crimes. As if 4 months, let's be clear about this. Bannon got on his radio show and said this.
All hell is going to break loose tomorrow. It's all converging, and now we're on, as they say, the point of attack, right? The point of attack tomorrow. I'll tell you this. It's not going to happen like you think it's going to happen. Okay, it's going to be quite extraordinarily different. And all I can say is strap in.
Now, that was Bannon on his radio show January 5th, right after he had spoken with President Trump. I don't know why he's out running around, walking around, when he actually helped rile up the base, tell them where to go, when to be there, and then just told them straight up, yo, hell's going to break loose, and you need to strap up. Be ready. I guess my point is if a judge thinks that someone who wants to overthrow the government is going to be deterred by 4 months in prison, he's crazy. He knows better. He knows better than that, but he's not going to lock up Bannon the same way he will lock up someone else and for the same amount of time. And it's pretty pathetic, actually.
All right, guys, question of the day today. Should I sue George Floyd's family? Kind of thinking that it should.
That was the voice of Candace Owens. So to keep the ridiculousness going, she is actually threatening to sue the family of George Floyd. She aims to defend her new best friend, Kanye West. Now, Owens ranted on her recent podcast bashing Floyd's family, who plans to file a $250 million lawsuit against West after he, the rapper, claimed that Floyd's death was caused by a drug overdose instead of police brutality. West apparently went to the premiere of Candace Owens' new documentary about George Floyd and was so taken by the documentary that he went on a show himself and declared that George Floyd was actually killed by his own drug overdose and that Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer who was actually convicted of that murder, had absolutely nothing to do with it. Actually, let's listen to what he had to say.
I watched the George Floyd documentary that Candace Owens put up. One of the things that his two roommates said was, they want a tall guy like me. They want a tall guy like me. And the day when he died, he said a prayer for, 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. He said a prayer for 8 minutes. They hit him with the fentanyl. If you look, the guy's knee wasn't even on his neck like that. When he said, mama is his girlfriend. They said he screamed for his mama. Mama was his girlfriend. It's in the documentary.
Now, to me, this is a dangerous pair. because Candace Owens is a very, very smart woman. Very smart woman. Very shrewd, manipulative, and she has made the decision to sell her soul, meaning she understands that all the money that she can make is being a part of the right-wing extremist as a black woman. They need that. They need a black face, honestly. They need a black face to spew their ridiculousness. And so she is the one that's decided to do it. It's almost like she's taking the place of Alex Jones. Now, she being as smart as she is and as devious as she is, she hooks up with someone who has all of this influence who is not a bright guy. People call Kanye a genius. To me, he's not a genius. We give him far more publicity than he deserves. And really, that's it. He's not so much the genius as we are the suckers. We just pay attention to a guy that throws tantrums and then calls him his, and then we call him a genius for throwing a tantrum. But there's nothing brilliant or genius about this guy. But now he's hooked up with this woman, and together with their money and their influence, they are a dangerous duo. It's like giving a kid a loaded gun. So to make a long story short, after he made that rant on a podcast, the girlfriend of George Floyd decided that she was going to contact lawyers and she was going to see if she could sue him for defamation, saying that what he said is completely untrue and it is causing her emotional distress. Candace Owens in return said, well, if she can sue, then I can sue the fiance and I can sue the George Floyd family because her suing my friend Kanye West is causing me emotional distress. Candace Owens also said that she is considering suing Black Lives Matter because they also are a part of this conspiracy and that they generated millions of dollars on this false premise that George Floyd was killed by Minneapolis white policemen. Now look, we all saw what we saw. It was in plain sight. And the case was investigated by state, local, and federal investigators. And Derek Chauvin was prosecuted and convicted by a jury of his peers based on eyewitness testimony, based on video, and based on the investigations and toxicology report. Now, perhaps Candace Owens is smarter than all of these people. Perhaps she is the only one that could truly discover the truth. I don't know. But what I do know is, and a federal appeals court late Friday issued an administrative stay temporarily blocking President Joe Biden's plan to cancel billions of dollars in federal student loans, throwing the program into limbo just days after people began applying for loan forgiveness. It was the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals that issued the stay while it considers a motion from 6 Republican-led states to block the program. The stay ordered the Biden administration not to act on the program while it considers the appeal. It's unclear what the decision means for the 22 million borrowers who already applied for the relief. The Biden administration had promised not to clear any debt before October 23rd, but it was expected to begin erasing debt by mid-November. So, I guess the crucial question now is whether the issue will be resolved before January 1, when payments on federal student loans are expected to restart after being paused during the pandemic. Millions of Americans were expected to get their debt canceled entirely under this plan, but now they face uncertainty about whether they will need to start making payments in January. Okay, let's talk about Herschel Walker for a minute. Let's not talk about Herschel Walker for a minute. We've had enough ridiculousness for this segment. Before I bring my guest on, I want to talk about a little bit why he's coming on today, run some statistics by you, and let you know how devastating substance misuse is, not only in teens like we talked about last week, but in adults, how it's ruining families, how it's destroyed lives, and how prevalent and common drug use disorder is in this country. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are roughly 210 million adults in this country. Of that 210 million, 10% are addicted to some type of drug. 10%, that's 21 million people are suffering from some type of drug use disorder. That's crazy to me. That is an insane number of people addicted to a substance. Now, provisional data from the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics indicate that there were an estimated 100,306 drug overdose deaths in the United States during a 12-month period ending in April of 2021, an increase of 28.5% from the 78,000 deaths during the same period the year before. Now, when I read this, the first thing I thought was the opioid epidemic. I'm thinking it's just opioids, but nope, it was drugs across the board. I mean, there were overdose deaths from synthetic opioids, primarily fentanyl, There was also psychostimulants such as methamphetamine, also increased in the 12-month period ending in April 2021. They had also increased, as did the death from natural and semi-synthetic opioids such as prescription pain medication. So when I read this, my first question is what it's always been when it came to drug addiction. What is the draw? What makes you give up everything to do something like this when you know it can kill you? So I can't come up with that answer. I had to talk to someone who I completely trust, who I would know would be completely honest with me. The question is would he be willing to come on and be completely honest with everyone, to open up? And he said yes. So I'm fortunate enough to have a friend that's been a lifelong friend. Literally, I've known him since I was like 6 years old, 7 years old. We grew up on the same block, and he went through some things that I was not aware of. But he shared them with me in private, and now he's willing to tell you his story. His name is Rayfield Mason. So everybody, welcome Chip. Chip, how you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, B?
I can't call it, man. I appreciate you being here today and sharing your story. I know that you went through some hard times with your addiction, and I wanted my friends and my listeners to understand what that kind of life is like, but I can only do it from my perspective, someone who's never been in that life, but I know that you can shed the light on this for us.
Yes,
so,
no doubt.
Quickly, how did you even get into it? Like, how did that start for you?
How did I get into it? I guess it started with the attraction to easy money. Like a lot of people, man, you want what you get on a whole hard road. You want the easy, quick money. You really do. And when you see, because I didn't see I don't know, congressmen, political people. I didn't see people in my neighborhood, you know, who had money. I saw the people who had money in my neighborhood, as you well know.
Right.
The people who were doing things that they had no business doing.
Right.
And selling drugs was the biggest thing, you know. And I never saw, when I see these people, you know what I saw? I saw the outcome. I saw the money part. I didn't see what they had to go through to get that.
Right.
I didn't see that picture.
So you started off selling. That was your thing. You started off selling. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
At what point did selling turn into using for you?
When curiosity, man. I wanted to know why women, especially, any type of people would do what I asked them to do.
Okay.
For this beige palette. I just wanted to know why people would do whatever I wanted them to do. And I figured at that point I had so much of it that, you know, I wouldn't miss it. A couple grams here or there. And it was a party thing. You know, I know a lot of people that sniffed heroin. My drug of choice at the beginning was heroin, raw heroin.
Okay.
And it was, I don't know, rich man's high, so to speak, because they would say you have a dealer's habit. I used to think that was a badge of honor to be classified as a dealer's habit, you know, and that's where it started.
So when you started, you were doing it just to have, what, party favors and have people over, and they come over, and then Chip was the dude that had the heroin? Was that exactly? Okay.
Exactly. It was a party thing. People would come over to the house, throw it on the table. We would party. We'd go out and hang out at the clubs, you know. I would even take people with me when I would go meet my connect in D.C. because I did a lot of dumb things, man. You know, I'd ride up and down 95 sniffing heroin.
What?
You know, with $20,000-$30,000 in the back seat with four people in the car.
You know what's funny, bro? What's funny is I grew up with you, right? And we grew up in the same hood, but when I saw you, I never knew this about you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like I saw Chip. Chip was all good. I mean, you were in the military at one point. You were, as far as I knew, you were doing good, you know what I mean? And then I saw you one day and you know,
yeah, I remember.
You weren't who I knew you to be.
Right.
So
see, the thing about that game, for some it doesn't. It's quick. It's real quick. You know, active addiction is fast, man. It creeps up on you and it destroys you before you even knew you had a habit. It's quick. It's real quick, man. Yeah, you're right. I didn't have to sell. I didn't sell drugs for necessity. People, I know a lot of people that sold drugs because they had no choice. They needed to help their parents out with money, put food on the table. And they were more serious about it than I was. Me, I did it, you know, because I wanted to, and this is a cliche you're going to hear a lot, get high for free. So you think in your head, you figure if you sell something, you can You ain't got to spend your money on it.
Right. Yeah. At what point did you realize the using was a problem? Like, it wasn't something you couldn't shake? Or did you ever realize it? Like, when did it hit you like that?
I'd say early, real early. It happened the first time I ever tried to go into a recovery treatment center at Bayview Medical. I think this was, early 90s sometime.
Right.
And that was because the story in the streets is back in then that heroin takes 3 days to get off of, right? Okay? That's what the misconception. That's something that we used to say years ago. And until you actually try to get off of it, you don't know. You didn't know that was bullshit. Excuse me for cussing, but you didn't know that until you actually tried. I'll say now, one of the first times when I went to Florida, I was sitting, I actually bought a train ticket, put my car on the train. I just went to Florida. Of course, I owe somebody some money. I figured I didn't have to pay him if I left. And I went to Florida, man, a few grams of raw and some money. I figured when that's gone, I'm going to go ahead and do those 3 days and come back to Baltimore and get paid again. I spent like 27 years trying to get back to the status of hustling, of selling drugs, and it never happened. But when I got down there, after everything was gone, I stayed down there for 2 months, man. And those whole 2 months, I was in an agonizing pain, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Just trying to get well, or?
Trying to get well.
2 months?
But 2 months, man. And I never really got there. So I came back to Baltimore because I figured I was cool. I gained about 5 pounds. I wanted everybody to see how good I looked.
Right. Right.
And I came back up here and I never got help. See, stopping using drugs is no, for a lot of people, for me anyway, it's no good if you don't have any guidance, if you don't have any direction. If you just stop and you don't know, you've been using for all these years, it's kind of like I needed somebody to hold my hand and walk me through life again to show me, what a lot has changed since the last time I wasn't using.
Right.
But when I went to Florida, I came back on my own. And I want to say that day I went to Emerson and Bright Street and got a bag of morphine.
The same day you came back?
Yep.
So let me ask you a question. And I know you told me some things just in private before, and you said you're going to be open today. Like, what are some of the things that you've lost during your struggle with addiction?
Oh, man, some of the things. Physical, I mean, my pride. I mean, when you say, what have I lost? Man, I lost respect for a lot of people. What have I lost? I've lost family members. The biggest thing is the family members.
Right.
Time with people that, that prayed for you every night for you to get yourself together. And when you finally do straighten up, straightening up for me was finding faith, belief in God. They are no longer here to share this with you. That was one of the biggest things I lost. My aunt, that is, I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
That raised me. See, I grew up in a household, as you well know, of I had my aunt and my uncle. My aunt, who was a teacher, she taught mathematics at Patterson High School at a high level. I mean, she had a master's in math. I had an uncle who passed the bar in his first time. He could have practiced law, but he decided to open up a liquor store. These were my heroes. These were the people I saw every day, but they didn't have any flashiness with them. So I looked beyond them to others who had the flashiness with them, with their money.
Right.
I didn't want for nothing growing up, as you know.
I know.
Nothing. I didn't need anything.
I know. That's what surprised me. And that's what makes me know that it's not necessarily the people that you think. Sometimes it's people who don't really have a problem. They just want something different than what they have, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So when you...
And go ahead.
No, Gab, what are you going to say?
And the attraction to that life, to that world, it's an addiction all in itself. To be in that world, if I could take out the act of addiction, that world for me was like a totally different place at nightlife to... When the sun went down, everything that went on, it was scary at times, but it was an adrenaline flow.
Did you ever feel like your life was in danger? Like you were going to lose your life?
Oh yeah, many a times. And that's another reason why I think I used, because for me, using gave me a badge of honor. It allowed me to do and see and deal with things that growing up, I wouldn't have been able to deal with these things because I wasn't exposed to these things growing up. So by using, it took me out of my person and put me in somebody else, man. I mean, I used to carry a .357 around on me. That's not me. I mean,
right.
Granted, if I had to abuse it, high off heroin, I wouldn't have thought twice. But because I was raised the way I was and I know right from wrong, come on, man, it's not what you're supposed to do. You know, sort of that heroin is what kept me going in that world. Wow. Yeah.
Did you, at your lowest moments, was because you said God was one of the things that you, well, was the thing that you turned to get you,
yes,
to get you where you are,
yes,
today. Was that something that,
yes,
you discovered in your lowest moments, or was it, were you introduced to it by someone else?
Well, of course we all grew up. I grew up, you know, with God in my life, you know, going,
right,
to church, Sunday school. But for me, it was the rules of Narcotics Anonymous that brought me back to reality.
Oh, okay.
The rules that the literature tells us, man, you know, you're a member whenever you say you are. So it was easy for me to be a part of something because I said I'm a part of it. And everybody accepted me open arms. I mean, they gave me hugs. They told me they loved me. You know, these are things that at first it was hard for me to accept. But after a while, you know, I realized I didn't have any other option. I couldn't do anything else, man. When I came up to Perry Point, the VA facility, I had no other choice. I didn't have anywhere else to go. I had no other choice.
What do you mean you had nowhere else to go? You still have family and friends at that point, right?
Well, family kind of is, you burn so many bridges, man. Family, they are waiting for you to fail now. I mean, family expects you to fail. My family did. They expected me to fail.
Really?
So, yeah, they expected me to fail. So my pride wouldn't allow me to go back to them.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, my pride wouldn't allow me to go back to my family.
When you finally went into recovery for the last time, did you experience the same kind of pain that you felt down in Florida? Physical pain, I mean? Did you still go through the whole withdrawal situation? Or was it different? Was it medicated?
Yes. No. Well, by then, it wasn't that much of a withdrawal. See, now, by the time I came out to Perry Point in 2016, my drug of choice had changed. It changed dramatically. I went from sniffing raw heroin to smoking cocaine. I guess I needed something. I learned through the program of Narcotics Anonymous, the disease doesn't discriminate. I just found another high, man. I needed to do something. I didn't learn how to not do anything.
Okay. So you were in Narcotics Anonymous and still sniffing cocaine.
Well, no. Let me correct that. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous, up until that point, my thing was cocaine.
Okay.
I had stopped doing heroin a while ago. Let me tell you how I stopped doing heroin.
Okay.
Back in 2001, I think it was, I got on this program, Dr. Hayes. People are very familiar with that down in Baltimore, Maryland General, methadone program. I got on this methadone program. I was drinking 120 milligrams of methadone each and every day. I wouldn't miss a day because I was afraid to. And at that point in my life, if you had asked me, when do I plan on getting off of methadone, I would have told you the day I die. It could be 100 years from that point. That's the day I get off of it because I had no intentions on getting off of it. I didn't think there was a such thing as getting off of methadone because it was something that was a crutch. It was the worst crutch I ever had in my life. It was worse than a family member giving you stuff all the time. You know, this right here was bad, man. And what happened is God works in mysterious ways. My kid's mother got me arrested for something I didn't do, and I had to sit over downtown at the Central Booking for 3 months after drinking 120 milligrams of methadone every day for about a year or so. I swore when I finally got out of there, I went to Towson after that, I had a detainer. So I didn't get home for another 6 months. And I made it a point never to go back to heroin. But
okay,
cocaine snuck in there. Yes.
So it's crazy, man, because I know you. You know what I mean? And it's to see you now, right, and to hear the stories that you've told me before, like I couldn't even put the two of you together. It's like it was a completely different person that you were talking about. Because the person that I grew up with.
I saw you one day on Asperger Street standing in front of a homeboy house. And you came in town that day. And we all standing around right by the alley, man.
Right.
And we were laughing. Well, you all were laughing and joking. All I could do because of you and another homeboy of ours, I was so ashamed of who I've become. You know, for a couple of us, they do know that this is not me, man. And I just wanted to, get away from that conversation, but I couldn't walk away. So I was like, right. Where you going, man? So I just wanted to disappear, man. I felt so low at that point in my life. But again, because of his grace and his mercy, man, August the 1st, 2016, was the day I surrendered, gave everything to God. And I started a new life, man. A life that I didn't see none of this coming.
So tell me
when
about
I got
this.
Clean,
yeah, tell me about this life now, how you got clean and what happened since. Like, what's the good life for you now?
Like I said, August the 1st, 2016, I went into a treatment center at Berry Point with no expectations. I didn't know what to expect. I just knew I had nowhere else to go. I went in there 2 or 3 months before that, the same place, and it was a 21-day program. It was the minimum amount of days you could stay there at that time. But you're encouraged to stay there for months until they tell you to leave. But anyway, I went in, and everybody said, how long are you here for? I said, 21 days. What do you mean? You know, and 21 days came up. I left, got on the bus, went back to Baltimore again, trying to hurry up and get back to show everybody my little 10 pounds I gained. And show them that, you know, I'm good now. Look at me.
Right.
You know, and didn't take no time. I was calling back out Berry Point, begging them to let me in. See, I had gotten a whiff of recovery. I had gotten a whiff of what I could possibly be.
Right.
And it stuck with me. It was a seed planted, bruh.
Right.
They finally let me back August the 1st. They asked me the same question. How long are you here for? Like, until y'all put me out, man. Until y'all make me leave Maryland. Until you make me leave this facility. I'm still here, man. I still go there and I speak to veterans when they first come into Prairie Point, trying to give them hope. I give them hope because somebody did that for me. And the program is set up in a way that we give back. We can only keep what we have by giving it back. So
okay. Doing
your interview right here,
yeah,
it's for me, man. It really is. It's for me.
Well, I appreciate you giving it and being so honest. I always wondered, man, like, because, I hear about, even my last guest last week, she was talking about how her son went with withdrawals and shaking and fever and sweating and pain and cramping. And she said that her son described it as dying. Like, he felt like he was dying.
Yep.
And so I wondered, you know, you never described that. You never talked about that pain with me. You talked about a lot of other things, but you never talked about that kind of pain. And if you...
Let me tell you this.
Okay.
Let me tell you this, Brock. That pain that she's talking about, you ain't got to do that for one time. Anybody who's listening, if you're contemplating recovery, one time, that pain, you ain't got to go through that for one time. You have a choice to never, ever go back. My thing, when I used drugs at the early in my active addiction, it was fun. Early, I'm talking about the first year or two.
Right.
It was fun. I had what I wanted. I had my drug of choice. Did, you know, what I wanted to, basically, you know, stayed away from the law. Everybody wanted to rob me, I found out later on in life, but stayed away from the stick-up boys. But later, towards the end, and I say towards the end means the last 27 years of active addiction, I didn't get high for fun. I got high for the sole purpose to die. You understand me?
What?
I got high because I couldn't put a gun in my head and drop the hammer. I used to think people that committed suicide were some of the strongest people on this planet. This is how the disease told me this. If you could take your own life, oh, you big. I got high because I wanted to take one big glass, Brian, and just go to sleep and never wake up again. That's what I am. I thought that's what I wanted. I'll tell you a quick story. I had surgery on my foot. This was in 2014, I think it was, at the VA. Now, they have a pre-op where they go over certain questions. Some of these questions are about your addiction. Of course, my questions were no. here we are on a gurney. They'd already given me the drugs they give you to bring you down a little bit. Right. And they're about to take me into the operating room when they give you the anesthesia or whatever else they give. Brian, my mind said, you know what? I don't open my mouth, man. I can go in this operating room and let them put me to sleep, and I can never wake up. This is the disease talking what? To me now. Remember that. I can go in this operating room. They put give me the anesthesia, and I could go out. I could die right there on the table.
Wow.
And my family, this is the disease, would be able to get some money from my body.
Wow.
Because they have a suitcase. We were going down the hall, and I had my mind made up. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. One guy was pushing me, put me in the operating room. It was so bright in the room. Walls were white, bright white. The lights were bright white. I looked around, bro. I said, my man, come here for a minute. I said, we got to go back over those questions y'all asked me earlier. He said, what do you mean? I said, I mean what I just said. We need to go back into that other room you just took me out of so we can go over those questions again. Push me back down the hall, about 8 doctors standing around my bed with clipboards. Saying, you said you didn't use. I said, I know what I told you, man. I just smoked some coke before I came in here.
Wow.
Okay? And yeah, they ended up sending me home that day. But
you were ready to check out. You were ready to check out for real.
So I thought. Now, that was who I was, man. That's what the disease had done to me. Today, again, by His grace and mercy, man, I'm a first-time homeowner.
That's me.
And my wife, I got married. We got married in our brand new house. The day after we closed the house, me and my wife, we got married in the house. My pastor came to the house. And he blessed the house right after he joined us in marriage. I bought a brand new vehicle off the showroom floor. I have a government job today. I have a grandson that's beautiful. Not my kids are too, but I have a grandson that I'm responsible for at times. I'm going to get him now. They let me keep him. You know what I mean? They let me hold my grandson.
Yeah, man, you're definitely doing big things. I mean, when I went out to see you, I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
That was the problem for me. The thing that I couldn't join the two of what you were telling me and what I was seeing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's amazing to me. And I told you privately how proud I am of you and how strong you have had to be to come to where you are now to get over what you've gotten over. But it's amazing to me because they don't seem like the same two people to me. So it's crazy to me. Absolutely crazy. You do become a different person.
It was always me. It was always me. It was just the disease got him.
Yeah, that's crazy, bro.
Yes.
That is crazy. Man. Well, I'm glad. Tell me about your wife, man. Like, how did that happen?
My wife. That's a good story. I like to tell the story. Yes. All right, my wife, who I love more than... Can I say her name?
Yeah, of course.
All right. My wife, who I love more than... life itself, man. Tawanda Mason, the person who was stuck by me, who was giving me inspiration, has pushed me, who has brought out of me something I didn't know I had.
Right.
She used to be she's a school teacher. She used to be my 20-year-old son, fifth grade school teacher.
Right.
She was his teacher. That's how we met. We still have nicknames for each other. I call her Miss Knight because that was her maiden name. And she called me Mr. Mason because that's what she used to call me when I would come to PTA meetings. So we knew each other as Mr. Mason and Ms. Knight. So time went on. You know, I am an electrician. She would get me to do work at our properties, you know, electrical work. And we just kept in touch from a distance. It was a distance we kept in touch from. She always had my number. She would always call me to do some electrical work. Probably because I was giving her the dopamine prices. She didn't know about it. She didn't know about it. She was kind of, you know, she's not out there mob, man, you know, but yeah, I used to give her good deals, man, and we just kept in touch, man. I even asked my son before we started dating if he had any problems with that, you know. She was that teacher that when we were kids, we had that one teacher the whole class had a crush on.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was that teacher, man, for my son in his class.
I mean, you definitely didn't do bad, bro. I ain't gonna lie to you.
Yeah, thank you, man.
You didn't do bad. You didn't do bad at all.
She's my inspiration, man. She, like I said, that house, it's all her, man. You You know, she's the one that initiated this. I was scared. I'm more, man. I get it. If you take a fish out of the water and you put him back in the water, he got to learn how to swim again.
Yeah.
I was scared, man. I had a 500 credit score one time. I'm up over 700 now. You know, I was scared. You know what I mean?
Right.
We got together. She led this. She spirited this, you know. The car, the new building, she spirited this. You know, our trips, we take vacations, as you know, we take vacations.
Every 5 minutes you want vacation.
yeah, God is good, man. We take vacations. We planning one now. Did I tell you about it yet?
No.
I got to tell you about the cruise for Alaska.
Now. Oh, to Alaska cruise. Yeah. I'm going to roll with you. We talked about that. I'm going to go with you for sure.
She does this. Because I didn't do these type things. Back in the day when I was using, they talk about pay for a trip a year in advance. I'm like, oh, no. For one, I ain't had the money to pay for it. Number two, what if I don't make it a year? I don't know where I'm going to be at in a year. Come on,
right.
Now I'll pay for a trip a year from now?
Right. Yeah, I guess addiction doesn't provide you with an outlook for the future, right? It's day to day.
No, not the future. The future is something you cross that bridge when you get to it, man.
So
the problem, I think, with a lot of kids out in the streets today. They don't plan, they don't think they're going to live to see 25. They don't think they're going to live to see 30. And you know what's worse than not living to see 25 and not living to see 30? You know what's worse than that, Brian?
Living it and being unprepared for it.
25 and 30 without a plan.
There you go. You're absolutely right.
Sure.
You're absolutely right. So let me ask you this, man. Do you struggle at all anymore? Like, is it really day to day, or is it something that doesn't even enter your mind anymore?
All right. For me, I'll never get high another day in my life. They tell you not to say that, but for one, I got way too much to lose. Number one. Number two, I just don't have an urge. I don't have a desire to use. I don't want to use anything. What I do struggle with from time to time is my value. My value. I struggle with that every now and then. My value. My worth. You understand? Sometimes I do get in a little rut, and I think that, you know, I ain't worth this. I don't deserve this. You know, I struggle with that at times. But outside of that, no, I have no desire to use ever again, man. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's amazing, bro. That's amazing. I'm so happy, man. I'm so happy for you. When I came to see you and when I talk to you now, I just struggle with seeing you the way that you say that you were for all those years. You know what I mean? I mean, I saw you once, like you said, and you didn't look good. You didn't look like yourself. And they were like, yo, Chip's on that stuff, man. I'm like, what? Not Chip. You know, not Chip. Anybody, you could have told me anybody else, right?
right?
But not you, bro. Right. And so when I heard it, like, I was shocked because I knew how you and I were raised. We were raised on the same block. I noticed your uncle wasn't no slouch because he straightened me up all the time. I noticed your aunt was straight up and down, and she was loving and caring. So for you to come out of that house, kind of the same kind of household I came out of on Ashburton, it just shocked me. But anybody can fall prey to it, and that is the lesson for me, that anybody can fall prey to it. Doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
It matters. It does not discriminate.
No, it's not.
And the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, we have people from 8 to 80, black, white, purple. I mean, purple, our hair is purple. But we got people from all over. I mean, and we all suffer from the same disease, and we all help each other by sharing. We don't help each other. You don't help nobody. You help them by sharing your experience for hope. It might be something that they're dealing with that you just spoke about. I pray that my conversation with you today affects one person. I'm cool.
Yeah, and that's the goal. That's the goal. Maybe that'll help that person who will help somebody else, and they'll pass it forward. One more thing before I let you go. Do you speak regularly? Like, do you go to meetings regularly once a week, once a month, every 6 months? How is it for you?
I go to meetings. I'm at meetings at least 3 times out the week. I used to be, I did the 90 and 90 at one time. That means 90 meetings in 90 days when we first come into the rooms. But you can do it anytime.
Okay.
But my meeting attendance has slacked up a lot. I lost my sponsor last year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was a big hit for me because this guy was a person that walked me through, literally hold my hand through life and show me how to get back into life, getting back into the rhythm of things. He was just a big brother to me, man. And he died about a year ago, man. And I've yet to get back into the groove to get another sponsor.
Right.
You know, sponsor is somebody who helps you walk you through this. The steps, the traditions of Narcotics Anonymous, the steps are something that we all do. You do them. You know, you just don't know you're doing it. Okay. It's something that helps you do the right thing. You do the next right thing, I guarantee you did some of these steps.
Okay. All right. Well, look, man, I'm going to let you roll. Sound like you're riding. You want to pick up your grandson, you say?
Yeah, man.
Good for you, man.
And yeah. What? That's a bundle of joy. I was mad at my son, man, when he told me he got somebody pregnant. but once you see him, man, oh, it's over.
I hear you, bro. I'm not a grandfather yet, but I'm waiting. I know it's coming soon.
I know. Don't be mad, man. When it comes, I'm telling you, it's going to be a blessing in disguise, though.
I think I'm the last one left out of the crew that's not a grandfather yet. But
Really? Yeah, you got a point there.
I think that I am. But I know it's coming. No worries. But listen, man, I appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, man. It means everything to me. I love you. I'm so proud of you. And we'll be talking, brother.
Yeah, Brian, man. I thank you for having me. I love you more than you know, brother, and I appreciate you, and I'm proud of you too, man. It's big boy stuff right here.
Yes, sir.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, man. You take care of yourself.
All right, brother. You too.
All right, Chip. Peace. So that was my boy Chip, my childhood friend. I am so happy that he was able to come on today and share with us the things that he shared. I got to be honest. I mean, I am so proud of him. Every time I see him and I see his growth, the things that he's doing now, which are big things right now, how he's completely turned his life around. It's unbelievable. And I got to tell you, you know, him turning to God works for him. It's worked for him and it's worked miracles in his life. But also when a man needs a good woman and she's there for him, I mean, he cannot overstate the things that his wife has done for him and how good she's been for him. I've met her. I love her. Tawana, if you're listening, thank you so much for taking care of my man. He's done an amazing job with you by his side. And I have no doubts that you guys will continue to grow and blossom in your marriage and in your life together. And look, can you please tell me the secret to being on vacation every single month? Every time I turn around, they're on vacation somewhere. But that's another story. Anyway, thanks to you, Chip. Have a great, 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 great weekend. Have a great Sunday, what's left of it. And now, that's right, you hear the music. It is time for the Petty. And now it's time to get those NFL picks from the Petty. I know you hear the music. That means my boy is up. And we are going to listen and talk to him. Look, I'm fully prepared to hear what he's got to say about the Ravens. He might surprise me and not say a word or be go light on me, but I doubt it. But let's hear what he's got to say. Let's give him a holla.
Brother B, how are you?
It's the Petty. I'm good, man. How was your week, brother?
It was great. It was fantastic, and it started off pretty good for this seventh week of the NFL schedule with the Cardinals beating those Saints. So I'm doing pretty good.
All right. Cool. So what you got for us? This week?
Well, you know, it's a slate of games coming up this week, and I think we're going to do quite well. And I'm going to start with the 1 o'clock slate, and we have those Dirty Birds from Atlanta, the Falcons, traveling to Cincinnati to meet those Bengals. I got to take the Bengals on this one. Yes, Atlanta looked good last week against my Niners. I'm just not convinced. I'm sorry, I'm not. So I'm going to take Cincinnati on that one. Next, coming off a bye week, we have those pesky Lions going to the Big D to see those boys down in Dallas.
You're going to pick your Lions, right?
No, I'm going to take Dallas. I don't like the Cowboys, but I don't like them. But I think they're a better team than Detroit.
Okay.
We have the Indianapolis Colts. Yes, I'm going to call them the Indianapolis Colts this week. They'll be traveling to Tennessee to see the Titans. I think the Titans are a better team. This is a division game, and I like the Titans in this one.
Okay. All right.
Green Bay, those cheeseheads, those Packers will be traveling to Landover, Maryland to meet those Redskins football team, Commanders. I like Green Bay. They have not looked well. There's been a change in Washington with Taylor Heineke finally taking control. But I like Green Bay in this one.
But see, that's why I think the Commanders have a chance, because of Taylor Heineke.
I do believe they have a chance. I agree with you, Brother B. I believe the Commanders have a chance, but I just like Green Bay a little better than the Commanders.
Okay. All right.
We have Tampa Bay, Tom Brady, traveling down to Carolina to meet those Black Panther Cats. And I'm telling you right now, That team down in Carolina, they're in just total disarray. They're in disarray right now. They fired the coach. They got rid of the receiver. They traded a running back. I think they're in the rebuild. And I got to just say, Tom and his boys, after being embarrassed last week, I think they're going to do damage down in Carolina.
Okay. All right. Hold on. What receiver did Carolina get rid of?
I believe it was Robbie Anderson.
Oh, okay. All right.
And here's one that's kind of intriguing to me. I like the Jacksonville Jaguars at home, but those Giants, they just may be for real.
I know, right?
They may be for real. You know what? New York is looking pretty good right now. We'll talk about the other New York team in a minute. But you know what? I do like the Giants down in Jacksonville.
Okay.
They might not be a fake 5-1 team after all.
I'll go with them.
And the last game on the 1 o'clock slate, I have your Baltimore Ravens going against those crusty Browns. Now, I should take the Browns. That means the Ravens will win. But I'm going to take the Ravens.
What? Okay.
I like Baltimore. First of all, I don't like Cleveland. I don't like them. And I have several reasons for not liking them. And I just like Baltimore at home over those crusty Browns.
Okay.
I just do. Now, we're going to start talking about the 4 o'clock slate. And talking about that other New York team, I'm talking about the J-E-T-S, Jets, flying out to Denver. Rumor has it that Russell Wilson may not be playing. That Jet team may be for real in the AFC East. I like them. And they're looking pretty good.
Why wouldn't Russell Wilson be playing?
Well, he has a slight injury with his throwing hand right now. Right. So it's a possibility he may not play. Even if he does play, Russell Wilson has not looked well this season.
Right.
I think he kind of fleeced Denver, got the money. It's like, okay, you know what? You get what you get. He has not looked good. I like, believe it or not, Denver at home over those J-E-T-S. Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right.
And Lovey and the boys are going to go out to Vegas to see those Raiders. And I like the Raiders at home. I just think they're a better team than Houston. We have the Seattle Sea Chicken Seahawks going out to L.A. to see those Lightning Bolt Chargers.
Who I can't say.
And I like the Chargers in this game. This is another big AFC, but it's a big matchup. It's a big match. I wanted to say AFC matchup because they used to be in the same division, but they're no longer in the AFC. Seattle's no longer in the AFC. But this is a big matchup. I just like the Chargers a little better than I like Seattle.
Okay. All right. All right.
Finally, on the 4 o'clock slate, and y'all know you're waiting for this one, I have those Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes and Big Red Andy Reid going out to the Golden Gate City to see those 49ers.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you have...
We're going to make this short and sweet. Take the Chiefs.
Okay. All right. It's going to snow tomorrow.
Well, you got to look at it like this. The 49ers have a slew of injuries. Yes, they just did get Christian McCaffrey, but he's injury prone himself. I just don't see it right now. Maybe a little further down the line, the 49ers will turn around. I just like the Chiefs a little better than that.
Okay.
I like the Chiefs better than the Niners right now.
I'm going to
take the Chiefs over my Niners.
All right. I don't know. It's the first time. It's the first time you've chosen someone over the Niners in the entire 7 weeks.
I know it's a surprise to you and probably everybody else and probably everyone that knows me that I'm taking the Chiefs over the Niners.
All right.
Finally, on the Sunday slate, we have the Steelers going to Miami. Tua returns. Will he be a little gun shy? He will be in South Beach for this game. But guess what? Maybe Mitch, the you know what, Trubisky got a little something to prove because he got benched and then he has a second chance. So you know what? I like the Steelers over Miami in Miami.
Oh, man.
Sunday
okay.
night.
All right. Okay.
And finally on the week 7 slate, we have the Bears going to New England. I like the Bears. I like Justin Fields. I don't like the coaching staff. I don't think Justin Fields and that team is being properly used. So them going up to Foxborough on a Monday night, I just don't see it, Brother B. I really don't. So I'm going to take the Patriots in that one.
All right. Okay.
And then you have it. And you know what? Like I always do, because I like you, because I like your show, I like what you're doing, I'm going to try to give you my little Thursday night special real quick so that people can, look at the slate and say, well, wait a minute, what's going on with the Thursday night game for next week? So week 8, starting on Thursday night, it's going to be your Baltimore Raven playing those Buccaneers.
And who you got?
That should be interesting.
Who you got?
That should be interesting. Well, Brother B, you know what? Man, I'm telling you,
That's a tough one. That's just really a tough one.
It's going to be a tough one for the Ravens because it's going to be a short week for them. You know what I mean?
It's going to be a short week, and they have to travel to Tampa.
Right.
To play Tom.
That's the only. That's the only tough one. That's the only.
Now, here's the thing, Brother B. If you can remember, Tom knows how to beat the Ravens. Tom has seen just about every defense there is out there, and that defensive backfield of the Baltimore Ravens is very suspect. Give me Tampa at home next Thursday against your Baltimore Ravens.
Here we go. I pray that they win. I do. I pray that the Ravens win. But, you know, we'll see.
I'm going to tell you a little something, Brother B. I want the Ravens to win also.
Really?
But I really do. I'm not a big fan of Tom Brady.
All right.
I think when he retires, he should stay retired. But you know what? He has a little something to prove. He hasn't been looking too good this year. He kind of put it out there that, you know, he may be done. He's losing a little something. And that's a must-win game for them. Just like this week coming, today, it's a must-win for them against Carolina. So I think they're going to beat up on the Panthers, like I said earlier, and then they'll be waiting for the Ravens in Tampa next Thursday night. There you have it, Brother B.
Well, I appreciate you, Petty. And listen,
I'm
thankful because I told my listeners that you're going to beat me up about the Ravens losing. And I'm so thankful that you didn't, that you're a true gentleman.
Well, here's the thing, Brother B. I picked the Ravens over the Giants, but I forgot that the defensive coordinator for the Giants knows that Raven team very well. And if I would have remembered that, I would have told your listeners and reminded myself to take the Giants over the Ravens. But see, if I do that, everybody thinks I'm a Raven hater. I'm not a Raven hater. I just call it like I see it. That's all it is.
You've been a traitor for 15, 20, 30 years already. So I don't want to hear that.
Did I not pick the Ravens last week to win?
Yeah,
and
you
they
did.
Disappointed everybody.
You did. You're right.
Okay.
You did that.
Okay. Damn, I'm picking the Ravens this week.
You are. Very true.
So I'm not the Raven hater that everybody thinks that I am.
All right, then.
But like I said, Brother B, I got to get out of here. Love your show. Keep on doing what you're doing. Get the listeners what they want. I got to go, brother. Peace.
All right. Peace out, baby. Later. So there you have it. You heard it from the Petty himself. You got your picks. Let's hope he'll put some money in your pocket. He feels really good about the picks this week. He did me a favor. He didn't bash the Ravens. In fact, sounds like he's coming around. He might become a Ravens fan. Who knows? So I'm thankful for him. Appreciate that. Also, I want to thank Chip Rayfield Mason, my guest this week. He shared a lot of important information, told us exactly what his story was and what his struggles were. But the most important thing that they say is it's not where you start, it's where you finish. He's doing amazing things right now in his life, and I'm extremely proud of him. So more than anything, he showed us that you can come out of it if you really, really want to and you take the proper steps, because he's doing big things. Also, I want to thank you. We've come to the end of this hour, and I want to thank you for giving me your time today. It's always special when people check in with me. Hit me up on IG, at On with Brian Pettaway. I like to hear your messages and your comments. Again, all of the feedback helps me grow, and I just love reading and hearing what you've got to say. Next week, I've got a really good show. I can't let the cat out of the bag yet, but it's not one you're going to want to miss. Make sure you tune in next week. I'm going to put flyers up so you can check and see exactly who it is. I'm going to put those up on Thursday. And really quick, I want to say something. November is election month, November 8th. Please, please, please make sure you vote. Now, there are extremists out there and they are in the minority, but what they do is they get together and vote. Please don't take for granted that because most of us have common sense and want great things for ourselves and for the country, that everybody's going to do something that maybe we should do what we're too lazy to do. No, get out and vote. It means everything. We cannot let this country turn itself over to backwards thinking, and that's exactly what's happening. So get out there, let your voice be known. Vote to do matter. Don't let anyone tell you that they don't. They absolutely do matter, and make your voice heard. Now, right now in some states, they have these militia groups and they have extremists at the polls videotaping and taking pictures of people going in to vote. Just trying to, you know, do the whole scare tactic thing that they used to do back in the 40s and 50s. Do not let that deter you. Do not let that stop you. Please be as diligent as our grandparents were and make sure you get out there and do your thing. Be heard. Please be heard. You can do it early through mail-in voting. You can do it at the polls. But whatever you do, just make sure you do it. All right, let me jump off of that soapbox. But it's incredibly important that we make ourselves heard in the voting process, okay? Well, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Remember what I say? The best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So after you rest and relax today, get up tomorrow morning ready to conquer the world, because that is exactly what I'm going to do. That's my philosophy. Make every Monday the start of something amazing, and that's exactly how I'm going to look at it. I look to hear from you guys on IG at On With Brian Pettaway. Please send me something. I look to hear your comments to tell me how you felt about today's show. Listen, if you're having any issues with substance abuse or addiction, please let me know that as well. If you need some help, I can guide you in the right direction to go, put you in touch with the right people, and we can get you started on the road to recovery. But please, everybody, send me something. I love to hear your comments and feedback. Other than that, listen, enjoy your Sunday and what's left of the weekend. I'm out of here. I will see you next weekend. Peace.